the high-stakes video game battle that you don't get to play. I'm David Brancaccio. Apple goes to federal court today. At issue is its App Store. The plaintiff is Epic Games, maker of the popular video game Fortnite. Epic claims Apple's running an illegal monopoly. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab is here. Kristen, what's at play with this?
Think back to the last time you downloaded something onto your computer. There are a bunch of different ways to access that download through your browser. Apple's ecosystem is totally different because to download something onto your iPhone, you have to go through the App Store. Apple takes a 15 to 30% cut of app sales, in-app purchases, and subscriptions, and Epic says this is unfair.
And how might Apple see it?
Well, there are the numbers. Half of the U.S. market doesn't run on iPhone software. Those are mostly Androids. Apple also says it doesn't profit off of 85% of the apps in its store, and that, frankly, it costs a lot of money to run the App Store, especially when it comes to reviewing new apps. The company says 40% of the apps submitted each week are rejected.
So to show it's a monopoly, what are some of the questions that have to be answered?
Well, the first part of this is defining what the market here actually is. Is it just Apple's App Store? Is it the smartphone market in general? Or is it even bigger than that, extending to PCs and gaming consoles where you can also play games like Epic's Fortnite? Then if Epic proves Apple is a monopoly, it has to also prove the company is violating antitrust laws by tying the App Store to Apple's payment processing system. Apple argues that's one product, not two. The trial kicks off today at 11:15 a.m. Eastern and is expected to last most of May.
All right, Marketplace's Kristen Schwab, thank you. Late this week, we get the big hiring and unemployment reports for the month just ended. Many expect that report to be red hot given vaccinations and stimulus, with some figuring that just under a million more people were added to payrolls in April or more. Many a Monday, we consult economist Julia Coronado, founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Good morning.
Good morning.
You think there's been a lot of hiring, huh?
Yeah, we're expecting more than a million jobs were added in April.
Yeah, because if you remember back to the pre-pandemic months, you'd get 200,000 a month, and you're thinking over a million. The consensus forecast is for more than 900,000. This makes sense, right? Given that some employers are complaining they can't find the people they need to hire?
If a million people got jobs, then somebody was able to hire. It's all about who you're hiring and what you're paying them. So we know there's still plenty of unemployed people looking for work. So go out there and sign them up and get them to work.
You do see that in this moment of a business cycle where you think there's recovery going on. The employer is starting to complain that they may have to raise compensation if they're going to find people.
That's right. We haven't seen the kind of downward pressure on wages we typically see in a recession. And maybe the fact that this cycle's been so fast, we'll avoid that. And that would be good news for workers.
All right, Julia Coronado, founder of Macro Policy. Who is that?
Aw. My cat.
That's so funny.
This is Diego.
Julia Coronado and Diego Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Public housing can be nice in Austria with affordable housing, sometimes including rooftop swimming pools, saunas, on-site childcare, tennis courts. Nearly 3 out of 5 residents of Vienna live in what's called social housing, city-owned or government-subsidized, and many say that's one reason why that city does well on quality of life. So how does it make it work? Amanda Peacher reports.
Not far from the center of Vienna, city employee Christian Schantel shows me a complex of brick and concrete apartments.
We are here in the biggest housing complex in the 3rd district of Vienna, built in the 1920s.
The city owns these 6-story buildings, which have lots of windows, greenery, and stone arches. There are courtyards surrounded by tall trees and lined with benches.
And as you see, it's quite livable, I think.
Subsidized housing is livable, and it's also available to the middle class. You can earn up to twice the average salary in Vienna and still qualify. The city owns 1,800 apartment complexes. Living here are tech workers, retired grandmas, immigrants, and middle-class families. Schantel says that is on purpose.
We have such a social mix within our apartments.
Most residents pay no more than 25% of their income in rent, including 29-year-old Thomas Fortunich.
It is like a big dormitory. Sometimes there's events or having fun together.
Fortunich says he doesn't need roommates with subsidized rent.
You can handle it if you want to.
Vienna's subsidized housing makes up 44% of the city's rental stock, and that drives down rents in the private market, says Justin Cotty, a researcher at the University of Technology in Vienna.
That's pretty unique, even by European standards.
That's because the city is the biggest landlord.
To some extent, the low rents in the social housing sector also keep the rents in the private rental sector low.
Cotty says social housing is funded by taxes to the tune of 1% of every Austrian paycheck. It adds up to almost $300 million a year for Vienna. But
if you look at how much the city spends, I think it's also always necessary to look at what it actually gets for it, right?
And what Vienna gets for it is affordable, high-quality housing that's available to almost anyone. In Vienna, I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
If it's not readily apparent, that is not Vienna, Virginia, Vienna, South Dakota, Vienna, Alabama, or Vienna, Maine. I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.